Little Gina France. Chapter I. Madame Villar, the baby is a dear little dark-haired girl, Madame Villar, Villar? Said the nurse. Madame Villar came forward, and her face expressed the joy in her heart. It was the twilight hour. Paris was busily honking and tooting outside the broad windows of Madame Villar's apartment. The apartment looked out upon one of Paris' finest avenues. And Paris has many fine avenues. This had been Madame Villar's home for many years. /images/iluso13.jpg, the apartment on Avenue Champs-Élysées? S where Madame Villar lived. It was here she had raised her family, her boy and her girl. It was the same girl whose dear little, dark-haired baby had just come into the world. May I see her? Asked Madame Villar softly. The nurse led her into the room, and the grandmother looked with tear-dimmed eyes upon this first grandchild. Baby Margot, was Madame's first grandchild. At least, that is what Madame thought. Little did Madame Villar know that at this same moment another grandchild of hers was opening wondering brown eyes upon the same world. The same world and the same country, France. Yet how different was this other grandchild's world from the world of little Margot? Little soft, comfy Margot in her billowy pink and lace down. Little soft, cuddly Margot, whom grandmother took into her arms the day. All the while, she did not know about the other grandchild. That other grandchild did not have soft billowy pink and lace pillows on which to rest her head. That other grandchild did not have a grandmother's loving arms into which she could cuddle down. That other grandchild, but I must not talk of her. I must talk of Margot. For Margot was all that Grandmother Villar could talk about or even think of that day. Her own little daughter's daughter. It was so wonderful to think of Margot's being here. So wonderful for poor Madame Villar, whose only son Paul was fighting at the front in the Great War. When the war had started, Paul had gone to fight for France. Now it was many months since Madame had heard from her soldier boy. Soon after Paul had joined the army, he had met and married Jean, J-E-N, in a tiny village of France. Paul had written to his mother in Paris, telling her of his marriage. /images/iluso16.jpg, a quaint street in a little French village far from the roar of cities. You will love Jean, wrote Paul. When this war is over, I shall bring her to Paris. But the war was not over, and Jean had never been brought to Paris. Madame Villar did not hear from her boy again. She did not know that on this happy day, while she held her little grandchild Margot in her arms, Paul's little girl was opening her brown eyes upon a different-looking world. In a sad, war-stricken, bleak little village far from Paris, this other grandchild was born. Chapter 2. Paul Jean's baby was as beautiful as little Margot, though she did not lie upon lacy pillows in a Paris apartment. Jean held the child tightly in her arms, as she rocked back and forth on a broken chair, and as she rocked she looked out upon the poor, little village street. Jean was a troubled young mother. Paul had been at the front for many weeks now. He did not even know that little Jean was born. If only Paul would come back to the village. There was talk of an invasion. Many small towns of France were being invaded and burned by the enemy. Would this little town be next? Each day the villagers asked themselves this question and lived in terror. Many had already started to tramp toward Paris. Many were deserting the village. But Jean could not go. There was little Jean now. And even if she could have gone, she would never have left until her Paul had come back. Each day a letter went to Paul at the front. Each day Jean trembled at the postman's footsteps outside her door. But no news. Only whispers and more whispers of invasion, invasion. Oh, if Paul would only come back. Jean rocked her baby. The invasion came. It was one of the last invasions before the Great War came to an end. The enemy burned the little town to the ground. The Great March of the Refugees had started. The roads to Paris were alive with homeless people, struggling, homeless humanity, with only the hope of reaching Paris alive. The village, Paul's village, was a desolate place. As the troop of French soldiers returned after the invasion and marched into it, there was not a soul to be seen. Among those marching French soldiers came Paul. /images/iluso21.jpg, a group of typical thatch-roofed houses in a little French village to the scene of his home he ran. Everything was in ruins. His house. Gone. His wife. Jean. Paul's voice was a shriek. Look, my son, in the cellar. Many of them hid in cellars for days before. It was a kind-faced old man speaking. The distracted Paul dashed into the underground stone cave and called again. Jean, oh, Jean. A little sound came from a corner in the dark, damp cellar. The soldier stopped suddenly, and his ears became those of a forest animal, so sharp, so alert was he. "My little one. Jean," he called. He struck a match. His heart nearly stopped. His Jean was not there. But something moved in the corner, something small and white. "A baby," Paul gasped. His voice had dropped to a husky whisper. He lifted the small, white bundle. It was a baby, a tiny young baby. The soldier carried the child out into the light. The little one touched his cheek with a pink hand. "A baby," breathed Paul, as he held this bit of humanity close in his arms. "And my Jean. We were to have had one like this soon." Then Paul noticed something around the baby's neck. A small locket had been tied around her neck with a piece of faded ribbon. With trembling fingers, Paul opened the locket. The soldier brushed his hand across his eyes, for he could not believe what he saw. Inside the locket was his picture. Chapter 3 to the front. Paul sat there and rocked the baby, his baby. He sat and rocked little Jean, much as his wife had rocked her before the terrible invasion. Now his wife was gone. Little Jean's mother had not been able to escape as had many of the other villagers. She was dead. Weak and undernourished, the poor woman had been unable to withstand hardships and suffering in a cold, damp cellar. The invasion had killed little Jean's mother. Paul alone now remained to care for this helpless mite. Paul was a troubled, frantic soldier. He would be called back to the front at any moment. What would he do with the baby? Just then he heard the bugle and the call to arms, to the front. A scurrying soldier passed him and called out, "Make haste! To the front!" Paul could not move. The baby was asleep in his arms. Little, trusting baby, his baby. The soldier dropped his head in the folds of little Jean's dress and sobbed. A slight tap upon his shoulder brought Paul's head erect. Bending over him was the same old man. It was the kind-faced little peasant who had spoken to him at the cellar door. "Come, my son," he said, "you are a soldier of France. With that my old body could fight in your place. But it is you who must go. France needs you, my son." He slowly helped the soldier to his feet, as the baby in his arms slept on. Paul saw the light of goodness shining out of the old eyes. With a surge of joy in his heart, he held out his child. "Oh, my friend," he cried, "if you will take my baby, I can go. I can then go and fight for France. But never, never could I leave her alone, even for France. Take her, friend, and guard her with your life." /images/iluso28.jpg, a typical hamlet in a beautiful section of France. The old peasant's eyes grew troubled. For he knew not what he, a poverty-stricken, weakened old man might do with an infant, here in this smoldering ruin of a village. But he held out his arms. "Yes, I shall take care of her," he promised. "With your life, my friend," repeated Paul. "Here," he added, as he pulled from his pockets handfuls of small coins. "All I have. Take it. Take her to Paris, to my mother. Wait." And Paul then wrote a note, a scrawled, jumbled note, to his mother, Madame Villars, in Paris. "I am telling her you are coming with my baby, with little Jean," he said. "Take her to the address I write on this paper. See? I pin it to her little skirt. Hurry, my friend. Take her. Take her. Adieu, adieu, my little Jean." The last words were heard afar off, as the father of little Jean joined his regiment. Then he marched to the front, into the face of a cruel battle. The old man stood still and watched the soldier disappearing. He and this baby were the only remaining inhabitants in this town. The rest were marching, marching, on their way to Paris. He, too, must march to Paris. An old man with a baby. It was a long way, but he had given his word to a soldier of France. Did this not make of him a soldier, too? The old body stiffened, and he stood erect. His hand slowly saluted the departing troops. He, too, was a soldier. He looked at the address which Paul had pinned to the skirt of little Jean, Madame Villars, Avenue Champs-Élysées? S. Jean? Zalaza? Paris. Paris? Why, yes, he could walk to Paris. He was a soldier. Marching refugees from other villages were constantly passing. The old man joined the peasant procession. On his lips were the words, on to Paris. On. And little Jean thought it was a lullaby and slept. Chapter 4 On to Paris. On trudged the old man. In his arms slept little Jean. She was as happy as Margot that day. Margot lay among the sweet-smelling cushions of her baby carriage and was rolled along the smooth walks of Paris parks. But little Jean's carriage was not so soft, nor did it roll along. Indeed, the old man's gait grew more and more jerky with every step. He watched the rest of the refugees passing him by. There were families with many children. There were men and women carrying mattresses and clothing, pots and pans. There were dogs running along and barking. They all passed the old man. Each one had another with whom to walk. But the old man walked alone. It grew very hard, this walking. He rested often, and each time it was harder to rise and to start the walk again. Only his promise to a soldier of France kept his old body going. At last he dropped heavily at the side of the road. Jean was asleep. The thud awoke her. The old man could go no farther. Jean did not cry. She was happy and satisfied. She had been well cared for. When they had passed farms with cows, little Jean had been fed. The old man looked at her and touched the little soft cheek with his horny hand. "Little one, I am finished," he whispered. "I have tried so hard, but Paris is too far, too far. It is too far to the front." With that, the old man slept. Jean lay in his arms and blew bubbles to the sky. She watched the trees as they swayed back and forth. "This world is a pleasant place," it would seem the tiny girl was thinking. /images/iluso35.jpg, very old stone houses in a little village of France. For a long time the old man slept. He was awakened by the sound of a clear voice. He looked into the sad face of a young woman in a black shawl. She was holding Jean's two little hands in her fingers. "Is this your baby?" she asked. "No, no, my child. I am taking her to Paris too." He tried to lift himself but fell back again. "You are spent. You must not carry this child any farther. Come, give her to me," said the woman. She took little Jean in her arms. The old man's eyes searched her face to try to fathom it. He tried to find there what he hoped to see, kindness. But all he saw was sadness. Suzanne Moreau, was one of the many refugees who had fled from her invaded village. She was one of the few in that long line who marched alone. Suzanne had always lived alone, as long as she could remember. Her life had been a lonely one. She had been a dressmaker in the small town where she had lived. Everyone there had known her as Auntie Sue. She was Auntie Sue to children and grown-ups alike. The old man tried to fathom Suzanne as he looked deep into her eyes and watched her wrap little Jean carefully in her shawl. "I am quite alone," she said. "I am strong and shall make the march easily. Do not fear." She gave her hand to the old man and he kissed it.